Welcome to the Mental Health Mukbang, where we make mental health easily digestible. My name is Jenny Wang. I'm a clinical psychologist in Houston, Texas. And today I have mama's cooking. So I have pork rib and lotus root soup. And I have a pork minced pork rice, I guess you could call.
Showing us up with your food.
I know, right?
I'm Christopher Vo. I'm also based out of Houston, Texas. I'm an MFT. I cooked today, so I've got cauliflower mash. I'm trying to be healthy. And then I threw out a bunch of junk on top of it, a bunch of meats and stuff. And I've also got these coconut nut clusters to snack on throughout the mukbang.
Yeah.
All right, my turn. My name is Jed Chun. I'm a therapist. I'm based out of LA. Today I've got made some mee goreng with a fried egg and honey green tea with alum. Yum.
Jealous.
Guys. All right, so that means next week I'm going to just show off my food. But I ate because I was starving. That's like the third week in a row. But I have dessert, which is Korean red bean, sweet red bean bread. I feel like it's totally worth it. So like I already ate half of it. So I didn't even introduce myself. I was talking about food. I'm Jeannie Chang, LMFT from Raleigh, North Carolina. And we're super excited to be hosting a special guest today, which Jenny's going to introduce.
So the month of October is Filipino American History Month. And so we really wanted to bring on a therapist who comes from that heritage and identity, just so we can explore what is it, how does it impact our work as therapists in terms of our cultural and ethnic identity. So we have the very well-known Leah Mankau. She's a LCSW in LA, and she runs the very, very popular Instagram account, Alyssa Marie Wellness. So thank you for joining us today. We are super excited to have you. Is there anything else you'd like to share with us as your intro? Anything that would be helpful for us to get to know you a little bit?
So my name is Leah Mankau, but I do run the Instagram page Alyssa Marie Wellness. So I have two names, Leah and Alyssa, if anybody's confused. I use them interchangeably. I am a licensed clinical social worker therapist. I own a group practice in Los Angeles, California. I also write for various online magazine outlets. And that's about it. I love social justice. I love advocacy. And for my food today, I have kind of like a traditional Filipino breakfast, which is eggs, rice, bacon, and then you just like mix it all together and eat it.
Yum. Yum, yum. Yeah, we try to show each other up with our food.
Weekly.
Yeah, so I'll get started with some questions. Super excited to have you here, Leah. And I guess starting with obviously talking about being Filipino American, or how do you call yourself? Because some people say that they're first generation, 1.5, second generation. Let's just start with how do you refer to yourself when you're introducing yourself when it comes to your race?
So I think I get kind of confused because it sounds like it's interchangeable. I was born in the Philippines. And then I came here when I was 4, and then I became a citizen when I was 20 years old. So mm-hmm. Just FYI, it took 16 years, and that's with knowing the language and having resources. So it's very hard, very hard to be a citizen. So I think, what would I be called? First generation?
Like 1.5?
I would say 1.5, yeah.
Okay, sorry, that's the dog. Yeah, so 1.5 generation then. Yeah, I identify as Filipino American. Mm-hmm.
And I asked that just because you touched on something, because I have a lot of people ask me too, what's the difference? And I'm like, I don't know. This is what I see it as. That's a good question to answer because I say second generation for me. I'm a second generation Korean American. Mm-hmm. I was born in Seoul. Mm-hmm. But I came here when I was 4 months old. So mm-hmm. technically I say my parents were the first generations to come and they brought me. That's why I say second generation, because mm-hmm. I relate more to the American culture, even though I'm Korean. So that's the way I said it. Do you guys see it the same way? Because Jenny says 1.5 with her mouth full.
I think it changes based on the study that you're going off of too. So there is not a whole lot of compatibility with that. Because some people refer to the first generation as first generation or zero generation, and that gets really confused.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
When it comes to identity, I think we were having some questions about how to refer to Filipino, Filipina, or Filipinx. Do you have any clarity on that for us?
I'm going to be honest. I don't have any clarity. I've seen people promote, you know, like saying Filipinx to be all inclusive. Mm-hmm. But then I've seen also people say, don't use that because that's the colonizer's terminology, right? Mm-hmm. So this is what I'm going to say. Use the if you're referring to somebody, use the language that they're comfortable with, right? But in terms of like Filipino, Filipina, Filipinx, or all of that, I think that there is no right or wrong, and you just have to do what's comfortable for you. Because mm-hmm. I've seen people go against all of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good point.
Sure. Absolutely.
Well, thanks for answering that. Yeah, mm-hmm. I have a question just about your career. Also, we're all fellow therapists here. So how did you get into the field of mental health, and how did your Asian identity play into that?
That's a really good question. I know. So I kind of want to say the mental health career found me. I got my bachelor's in sociology with an emphasis in social work. And then I went to get my master's in social work because I wanted a formalized education and advocacy. I wanted to do something in the social work field that helped underserved populations and connecting them to resources, and just something with empowerment. So when I was in grad school, all of my internships were actually clinical. I didn't realize a social worker could be a therapist. Mm-hmm. And then I just learned you can do advocacy on a micro level. And then I really fell in love with that part of social work. And that's how I started to get into the mental health field. Mm-hmm. And I kind of just never left. I never ended up doing macro work, which is completely fine. But that's kind of like how my path into mental health came about.
Actually, was that something that was accepted by your family? Like, how did your family feel about you entering the mental health space?
Yeah, so I know that, you know, there's like a lot of push for Filipino Americans to go into like the medical field and things like that. And I think that's true for a lot of families. But my family was actually very open about it. They're really happy for me. They're really excited about it. My family, I think I've been really lucky. My parents believe in mental health. Mm. They believe in like psychiatry. They believe in like therapy and those things. Yeah, they've come to learn more about it as they've been in this country for decades.
Right. So you touched on the fact that, you know, that generalization, how mm-hmm. Asian Americans don't really accept it, or Asians from first generation mm-hmm. don't necessarily have an acceptance for mental health. Would you say that that's true in your culture as well?
Yeah. Yeah, it absolutely is. I think there's still kind of like a stigma around mental health services. And, you know, depending on like if that family is like very spiritually based, then there's more of an emphasis to like pray about it or to go to church or to talk to your priest. So that definitely still exists. And I think there's still also that emphasis on like, maybe you should see a doctor, right? There's more acceptance with seeing a medical doctor than there is with seeing a therapist. And I even think, you know, the stigma is so deeply internalized that there are people who in my community who are for therapy, are pro therapy. Right? They're supportive of other people going to therapy, but they themselves might not feel like they should be the ones to go to therapy. Mm. So it's like, oh, that's for you, but that's not for me. So there's still that internalized stigma there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So how would you, for our listeners, right? A lot of our demographic tends to be that college age demographic. What would you say to them if they are, you know, combating that stigma, whether they want to be joining the field or whether or not they want to be seeking therapy? Like, how would they have that dialogue?
How would they have that dialogue with themselves or with their parents, with their family? So that's a really hard one because you can't make anyone believe or see what you believe and see. And so the best that I can do, like tell people, is to really help your parents understand what it is using your own words, using your own language. Sometimes like psychoeducation, right? I feel that it's helpful if you can find psychoeducation in your native language. If that's what your parents relate to the most, then that might be really helpful to dig that up and then show it to them or share it with them. Or if you can find like a television show or a YouTube channel or something where it's like somebody talking about mental health in their language, that might be easier for your parents to connect to, right? Because representation matters. So if your parents see this like doctor or psychologist and that looks like them saying, hey, this is important, this is real, then maybe they might be able to be influenced a little bit. Mm-hmm. But definitely battling the stigma, I think, is it's an everyday thing within ourselves and within our communities.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I 100% agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Before I ask a question, because I feel like Chris and I are just asking the question, how about mm-hmm. Jed or Jenny?
Jenny's got a question.
Oh, well, no, I mean, I think So what are some themes that you've noticed? I don't know how much of your practice you work with Asian Americans or the Asian kind of mm-hmm. community, but what have you seen that have been themes that have come up, right, in your clients who identify as Asian or Filipino? What are some things that they're really kind of struggling with?
Some themes that I found in symptoms are somatic symptoms. Mm-hmm. So like a lot of headaches, a lot of stomach aches, a lot of gut issues, a lot of like poor sleep, like just like stuff that they keep going to the doctor for, and the doctor just keeps telling them to go to therapy, and then they find me and they're telling me that the doctor doesn't believe them, you know? So I see a lot of like very somatic issues. That's the theme I see amongst a lot of my Filipino clients.
Right.
And in terms, you know, just in terms of like presenting issues that they come in with, it really it does run the gamut. Mm-hmm. And of course I see, you know, clients say there is secrecy, actually. A lot of them don't tell their friends or family that they're in therapy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's something else I've noticed, but in terms of presenting issues, it really runs the gamut.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's let Leah eat for a second.
Oh no.
Well, how do y'all, I mean, I think that's something we've talked about a little bit about Asian identity, but we actually, all five of us come from five different ethnic identities within Asian culture. So, I mean, like, how do y'all see this kind of manifesting in kind of this type of work? And what meaning do you bring to of your identity to this therapy work?
Deep, Jenny. As we let Leah eat. That's a good question, because I would have asked Leah that as well. You know, when I say the best I can, because there's some self-disclosure that can be beneficial for clients, just so that representation matters, as Leah said, and just that sure. they see me and can know that I can relate to their experience, but also have that it's not expertise, but just able to guide them with my, mm-hmm. you know, clinical experience. So I actually tell them, this is what I tell first generation parents, which would be my age and up. I grew up with first generation parents. So I understand the struggle of your children, the second generation kids, right? And then I say, because I consider myself a second generation Korean American. However, I, as a parent, can empathize with you parents when I'm talking to the parents, because I am also a parent raising technically, I guess, third generation kids, but because of my upbringing and being, having experienced that cultural clash and the self-identity that I see in your kids, I'm able to relate to both of you. So I kind of say that as my beginning thing. Mm-hmm. So I can reach them in that note, but then I go into what I need to do. But I share that most of the time because I feel like there has to be that personal touch as well. Does Jeannie get it? Mm-hmm. You know, where she looks young, or does she really know as a parent? And do you get it? If I talk to a 16-year-old, you don't get it. You're a mom, you know, that kind of thing. So yeah. That's how I start usually to get some change going. How about you guys?
So I work with a lot of families, right? And I think one of the biggest things for me that I've realized that I need to do is kind of hype up my credentials, because when it comes to like Asian culture, right, it's always about like why come to you, like what justifies us coming to you, and especially since I'm younger and I don't have kids, right, and they're like, what do you know about families, what do you know about like our relationships, what do you know about raising kids, right? And I feel like for me, it's always, I have to emphasize the marriage and family part of my license, right? It's like, hey, like I'm trained in this. I have knowledge of this. And I think one of the things that I actually have to do sometimes is I have to translate it in a way that they're like, oh, okay. So you're kind of like a doctor for my brain. It's essentially like the Chinese translation. But it's not quite exactly that, but in any case, like there are some times where I've like, they like, in order to get to that place where they respect my opinion, it has to come from like, you have to bring up that expertise versus Jeannie. She gets to pull the, like, I have experience card. I'm here. Like, well, I studied this and like, I've had multiple, like I have a history of clients, and like, you can go ask all these people that can vouch for the fact that I'm capable of doing what I do. And I think that's definitely more of like a cultural thing. I definitely didn't see that as much when I was working with other populations. But now that I work primarily with Asian families, right, I find myself having to do that a lot. It's like, hey, you can trust what I have to say. And I think after eventually you develop that relationship, it becomes a little bit easier. But the path to getting there, I feel like, is one of those cultural things that you just have to work with. And I think at the end of the day, right, there's that bit of relatability, right? Everyone came from a family. Everyone has been in a family, and everybody's like been a part of one. And what that looks like might be different for everybody, right? But that doesn't mean that we don't all have at least some kind of shared experience in this, whether it's positive or negative. And there's at least that little bit of relatability in that sense. And kind of like Jeannie was saying, right? Just the fact that you are Asian and that you do have these at least somewhat shared cultural values that kind of hold over, definitely helps with connection. And I think that that's something that a lot of my clients come in looking for, right? So especially the younger clients. I think I've had multiple people come in saying like, hey, I've been looking for an Asian therapist because the other therapists just don't get it. And so it's definitely a recurring theme.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Leah?
What was the question again? Like, I'm just like hearing all these stories and I'm like, wait, where are
we? Yeah. No, that's like me all the time. I'm like, I don't remember. So the question was, how does your Asian identity interface into your work then? How does it maybe enhance it or really kind of inform your therapeutic work?
I think it really gives me like a wide range of perspective. Growing up in America, I have like that American mentality, that American mindset. But growing up Asian American, I also have like a different mindset, you know, stemming from my cultural heritage, my family values, and the way I grew up in like my little micro home. So I think it kind of just gives me a wide range of just like the different types of human functioning. So let's say, for example, you know, a lot of things that if a non-Asian therapist were seeing an Asian client, they might pathologize a lot of what happens in their families as like codependency or whatever. But I think, and I get that because I'm also American, so I get where that lens is coming from. But as an Asian American, I'm like, that's not codependency. That's, you know what I mean? That's like very cultural. So I think it kind of gives me just like this competency that I maybe wouldn't have had otherwise. And I think that it helps me connect with my Asian clients a little bit on a deeper level, mm-hmm. on a much deeper level. But I do hear you, Jed, on the having to hype up my credentials. I had to do that a lot before.
I think we still have to do it, even because I guess the benefit of being Asian, you look young. So you have to bring in my age, which I hate to do sometimes. Well, I'm like, you know, so being this age, so, oh, I guess I'm 10 years older, and, you know, and it's not just that obnoxious, but because they'll talk down to me. So I know they think I'm much younger. And so I think we all, with Asian Americans, I feel like, I think I told Jenny this, sometimes our own Asian American community can be the toughest, right? We're trying to reach them. And we can connect with them, but they can also be the toughest to work with in that sense of the stigmas and everything that we're fighting, right?
Mm-hmm. What about you, Chris? We know that you don't necessarily work with a whole lot of Asians in particular.
I don't necessarily work with a whole lot of Asians. I do work with some, but they're few and far in between. I think it's has to do with just the area that I live in, right? I get a lot of Asians who ask me for free therapy. you know, those texts later, like, hey, I have an issue, by the way. Can I get advice on this? But I agree with Leah of I've lived so many different experiences that it helps me empathize with even new perspectives and be open to them that are alien to me, right? I know that, you know, I just see all these different dichotomies and things like that. Mm-hmm. I will share that when I've worked with some older Asian clients, I've had the issue of them assuming that I would align with them on certain things, right?
Yes.
Where they'll like start talking to me in Vietnamese and be like, you get it. I'm like, no, I don't. Yes. Like, this, please, please, please don't put me in your triangle with this. Do you ever get that?
Like I've had that where they say really foul things and like, you know what I'm talking about. I'm like, no.
Yeah. Distance, like very quickly distancing myself back. Like, no, I don't. Yeah. I don't want to be a part of this at all.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
That's funny. That's true.
And so Leah, so obviously Chris was talking about Vietnamese clients, but do you get that from your Filipino clients as well? Like trying to align with you and speak Filipino?
I've had it happen before, but I don't speak Filipino.
Okay.
So yeah, and then so, but I've had what he's saying I can relate to with the older generation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's just like them like saying things that I don't agree with, and they're just like, "You get it, right?" You, and I'm like, "No." So it's a very fine balance.
Yeah. It also sucks because I barely speak Vietnamese as I do. Mm-hmm. So when they start speaking to me, I'm just like, I don't.
Google Translate.
Yeah, like, quickly, please.
You know what? That's a good point. So Jenny, how's your Chinese or Taiwanese?
That's pretty good.
Is it? Okay. Oh, you're so, because you're 1.5, I guess, technically.
1.5, yeah.
Because my Korean is very conversational, but not very clinical terms. I don't know any of that. No, there's no way I could ever conduct any kind of therapy in Korean, but I get asked that. But I'll admit that's one of the questions we wanted to ask Leah is just how true she stayed to her Asian identity. Like meaning, I'm not saying true, but how much of your culture has shaped you and your work? Like, is that a big part or do you separate Filipino and American? Am I making sense?
Can you say more?
So for example, there's some regrets that I have being, I wish I spoke better Korean. Mm. And I feel like I rejected that part of my identity growing up. So I'm wondering, did you have any of that cultural conflict that I was referencing to that some of the young kids have? So my regret today is I could have spoke better Korean, but I purposely chose not to speak it because I was like, I'm not Korean. I'm American, right? But now, many years later, I'm like, oh my goodness, that was technically my first language. Why didn't I keep it up? Hmm. So I'm wondering how much of you stayed true with that, where I rejected some of it early on in my life.
So I don't speak my language, not because I rejected it, but because my parents never taught it to us because they didn't want us to have a hard time when we came to America. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I'm mad at them. But I think in terms of my cultural roots, I feel that I'm very tied. I try to go to the Philippines every other year. I'm very close to my family. You know, we have those big holidays and we eat traditionally Filipino food. In my home, we have an altar that we just put up of all of our relatives that have passed away, you know, to like stay connected to our ancestors. When it comes to my clinical work though, because I was trained very psychodynamic from a predominantly white school, USC, I think because of the way I was trained, just who I am in general, it's not because I reject it. It's just, I wasn't trained to bring in who I am into the room. So it's not for me personally, it's not because I reject it, but that's just how I was trained. I'm very psychodynamic. Now, if I have a Asian or Filipino client and I feel like it needs to come in, like if they use words that I know, like Lola Lolo, which means grandma, grandpa, you know, like I'll use it too, you know? So that's where it comes in. I don't know if I'm answering your question.
No, but, you are. That's yeah. Really, that's like Jed's upbringing, I feel like, very similar.
Yeah.
I said it sounds like Jed's, well, because I guess even you, Leah, talking about her parents really supporting her mental health, beginning mm-hmm. into the mental health field, already told me a little bit about your family. That makes sense, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. In that level. But, and I was just trying to bring Jed into the conversation. That's all.
Random, just a random fact, nothing to do with Asian culture, but my parents did speak Tagalog or Visaya. They spoke both growing up. They just never taught it to us, but they always spoke it. But I think because of that language and like hearing it all of the time, I was able to pick up another language, which was Spanish. So I speak mm-hmm. Spanish fluently. I've done therapy in Spanish. I've done immigration work in Spanish. Yeah, I'm very fluent in Spanish. But so I think, I don't know, it's kind of connected, kind of not, but because I heard them speak this other language that's so similar to Spanish, I was able to pick up another language.
That's cool.
So try to be competent in as many cultures as I can.
Super awesome. Cool.
What does your clientele typically look like? Like, do you see a growing number of Asians in therapy?
I do, and it's hard to tell. So I work with a lot of people who are young professionals, mm-hmm. Especially like you were saying, like your location calls for different types of people. So my location calls for a lot of young professionals. I'm seeing a lot of Asians in therapy, but I don't know if that's because a lot of Asians are going to therapy or if it's because I'm getting a lot of calls because I'm one of the few
right
in my town. Do you know what I mean? So I don't know if there's more, yeah, or if they're just finding me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I really wish there was more work in understanding a lot of these dynamics and how, and because it would help us advocate for our profession, right?
Yeah.
Do you guys have any other ideas on how we can help advocate or other people can help advocate to normalize and destigmatize conversations about mental health?
Specifically with Asians? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, within our demographics.
I think we just have to talk about it. Like personally, it's like, what are you doing today? Oh, I'm going to go see my therapist. Oh, yeah. My therapist talked about this. Oh, I'm working on that in therapy, right? Obviously, like whatever you feel comfortable with, but I feel like it has to just be part of our regular vocabulary instead of, you know, like I know some people when they're going to go see their therapist, they'll say, I'm going to a doctor's appointment or I'm going to, I have a Zoom class. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Right.
So it just depends, but I think it's got to just be part of our vocabulary.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Like I had a session last night and my daughter's like, are you doing therapy tonight? And I'm like, yes, I am. Mm-hmm. And one of those things where I feel like when she can say it so nonchalantly, I'm like, that's impact, right? Like when it's person to person, when it's something that's so normalized, like I'm going to see my dentist. That's where the shift is possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, I say it starts with us, meaning not just us as clinicians, me as Jeannie. Like I have to be careful of my own stigma or self-stigma and say it myself. Right. Even sometimes in my talks, I'll even talk a little bit about my own vulnerabilities just so I'm relatable to and going, hey, I also have to work on this or I struggle with this all the time. Mm-hmm. That way it's not like, hey, I'm helping you and I'm just this person that knows what they're doing. No, I just don't think that's not normal too, because we all struggle.
Yeah. At this point, do you guys mind if we segue into a little bit of a community Q&A, just some questions that people submitted? It's more generalized questions. So one of the questions is from Steph Ho. It's, do you guys manage to shrug off some of the emotional weight you get from listening to your clients? How difficult it is? And I've always wondered how strong you'd have to be when working in this field.
I want to unpack what the word strong means, actually. I just want to unpack what that person means by the word strong. Mm-hmm. But so was the question like, how do we cope?
Essentially, how do you cope?
Yeah. I cope with, I have emotional boundaries. Mm-hmm. I work on my own codependency because there's a little bit of codependency that can get involved, right? So you got to work on your own codependency. And then on a very practical level, I exercise. Mm-hmm. I go to the gym. I used to go to the gym.
That's awesome. Great answers.
What about you guys?
Yeah, I think as therapists, we have this like weird tension of like, you know, empathizing, but not allowing, right, that to pull us into, right, the emotional heaviness and intensity of our clients. And that tension, I think, is hard. It requires a lot of focus, a lot of energy to maintain. Yeah. And so like, I think like Leah said, I don't tend to self-disclose really much in my work, you know, like they know I'm Asian American, they know whatever they know about me on like the internet, but beyond that, like, they don't know, like, you know, all the details of my life and that's not really the space for that. But at the same time, I think there's a human factor, right? And I think bringing that in as much as you feel comfortable as a therapist, like, is helpful. But I think those emotional boundaries for me keep me safe as a therapist in terms of not getting pulled into, right? And at the end of the day, after seeing X number of clients, being like, oh my God, I can't do this anymore, right? Because I think that can weigh on a person and that could lead to burnout, right?
Yeah.
Because you being emotionally triggered by your clients all the time means that it's now stored in your body, right? And that's now like manifested in your life. So like Leah, I also regularly exercise because if I don't, I just can't function. Like I just have to release it. So yeah, it's hard though. It's really hard to navigate that space. And in the idea of being strong, like there are lots of therapists who have mental health struggles of their own.
Yeah.
Depression, anxiety, diagnosable disorders. Just because you struggle with mental health disorders does not mean that you can't be a therapist. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, it might even make you more empathetic, right? Because you understand how hard it can be to wake up each day carrying those struggles. So I don't want to discourage anyone, right? Like, none of us have these perfect, beautiful, packaged lives where we're just like always on top of things and in control. We're human, but we also have to be cognizant of how we take care of ourselves in the work. And that allows us to show up well.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with that. You know, we're human, right? It's, we struggle, we have our own issues that we battle with as well. But, you know, just making sure that our boundaries are strong, I think, is incredibly important in this work. But it doesn't necessarily make us, you know, stronger than the average person. I don't want to look at it in that way. Mm-hmm. Next question. Ivy Gal, I know the answer to this, but I definitely want to open this up to normalize it. Ivy Gal asks, do you ever get annoyed at a patient for talking about the same issues over and over again, or not being able to get over the same problem?
What was the last part? I missed what you said, the last part.
Or not being able to get over the same problem.
I wouldn't say annoyed. But my style is more direct. So sure. I'll be like, okay, why do you keep talking about this? No, I mean, I'm a little nicer than that. But mm-hmm. No, I will point things out. Mm-hmm. So I don't think I don't think it's real annoyance. It probably is maybe more on my end where I do want to see change happen and, mm-hmm. and I see their distress, right, about sure. the same problems. Yes, and I do see that a lot because I work with a lot of parents and teens. So, you know, you have the same family patterns, right? So then sometimes I do some radical interventions or I literally call it out and they don't like me sometimes, but I haven't lost a client yet.
Yeah.
I'll be like, seriously, I don't want you to talk about this next week. So I've said that before. I really have because it's the same problem, but that's my way of encouraging change.
Sure.
So I don't know if annoyance is the right word, but because I want to show that I'm there to the very end, I'm not going to drop them or it's not like that. It's just, it's for the client's sake of seeing their distress and the same unhealthy patterns. I want that to change.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Me personally, I don't think I get annoyed because I fully believe in meeting the client where they're at, right? I think that some things do take time and, you know, going over the cycles of change, instead of saying that you are struggling with the same problem over and over again, I say that you are just still in pre-contemplation or contemplation, right? Or you have relapsed and you're now re-entering that cycle of change. And there's nothing wrong with that. Sometimes we as therapists are just planting seeds and they'll sprout years, decades down the line, but that's not my place necessarily to put that on you. However, if I feel like it is instead lack of a desire to change, there's a difference between like wanting to change but being unable to and instead holding on to that, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Makes sense.
I definitely feel frustrated at times because especially in the earlier parts of therapy, right? You're still trying to get to know them. They're still trying to explain their problem to you. And you're just really trying to, I think in that moment, sometimes it does get a little frustrating, especially if you're like 10 sessions in and you're still kind of on this kind of issue, right? And they're still trying to explain it to you. I think that it is part, like, I try to tell myself that it is part of the cycle of change, like Chris said, right? It's figuring out, but for me, it's figuring out, like, what about this issue is so recurrent? And what is it at the core of it that's driving this, like, feeling? Like, what is going on with this person? What are they, how are they thinking about this situation that makes them so stuck? Right. And obviously I like to reflect that back at them. It's like, hey, like I get the, like, I'm feeling a little bit of this from you. Like, how are you feeling about all of this? Like, what about this situation is making you frustrated? Right. Because if they're constantly saying the same thing over and over again, there's something that they're hung up. There's something that they're frustrated about as well. Like, whether it's the fact that they're still thinking about this or it's the thing itself, or if there's an underlying core value that they don't realize has been violated and they're trying to express that, but they just haven't gotten there yet. Right. Mm-hmm. So I think for me personally, like I do feel it sometimes, but I use it as a way of reflecting back and I use it as a tool to kind of try to connect with them, but also help them connect that experience with whatever is going on. Because oftentimes in therapy, what we feel is sometimes an extension of what it is that our clients are feeling. And it's always helpful to kind of reflect that back. It's like, hey, I'm getting a sense of this. Like, do you feel this at all? And if not, well, maybe that's something that I need to figure out for myself.
What about you, Leah?
You know, when I do the Q&As on Instagram, I actually get that question a lot.
Yeah.
And so very personally, I really don't. And I think that's the difference between talking to a therapist versus talking to a friend, because I think people, what they're doing is their friends are getting annoyed. So they're wondering, is my therapist getting annoyed? And that's, therein lies one of the differences. I personally don't, but I also pull from like a deep sense of empathy because I've been there. Mm-hmm. I know how hard it is to grapple between what you know and how you feel. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So, and I also just, I also have a lot of hope and faith. I ground myself in that. So I know that no matter how long it takes, they'll get there.
Yes.
And then I just let it go. Yeah. So I personally don't. I normally don't.
Sure.
Yeah. I would wonder with repetition too, like, I'm curious about it more than anything. Like, it's not even annoyance. It's kind of a love of like, do they not feel that I'm understanding them? Mm-hmm. They must repeat, or is this a safer distraction? Mm-hmm. Something else, right? Is it something that they feel comfortable rehashing over and over, so we don't go to those unsafe places, or places that feel threatening, right, to bring into therapy? And I think that the people imagine frustration like the therapist has an agenda. I don't have an agenda. Like, you come see me, we just go where you want to go, and so I'm not going to get frustrated because I'm just following you. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to steer you in a certain direction expecting for a certain outcome.
Right. Right. Because our clients set the goals, right?
I was just saying that I feel like I'm seeing the differences in approaches here. There's the directive people and then the psychodynamic people.
It's funny because I in therapy, I am very directive. Right. I challenge my clients, but I just, the word annoyed isn't the word that sits with me. Yeah, I will challenge if
that's
there
the
is
right word.
Resistance. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to determine whether or not it's honest, if they're trying to hold on to it as like a safety measure, a crutch or what have you, or if they actually want to work through this goal. Right? Because like I said earlier, you're the one who sets the goal. I'm here to help you realize that goal. But let's be honest, if that's your actual goal, because if not, we can set some other ones, right? Like, it's that's not an issue with me. And like, you know, like you guys said, it's the client's going to be the directive part of this. So I do equal parts both, depending on, you know, what the situation calls for.
But it does sound like we're unanimous. Doesn't necessarily mean annoyance. Just to put the person to answer that question. Right. Yeah.
Frustrated and annoyed, I think, are two very different words.
They are.
You really have to recognize.
I would agree with that.
Of them.
Let's see. I have time for one more question.
Yeah. Let's see. Johan Batista and like four other people are asking the same question. How do you keep your friends from treating you like a therapist of just a regular instead of just a regular friend?
Here's my hot take on that, right? The only difference between a therapist and a friend is that you pay your therapist and that they have to keep your secrets.
because, I think there's more.
Okay, this is an oversimplification. But the way that I see it, right, is that before therapists, they were friends. And I think that each therapist has their own boundaries, right? I have no qualms with my friends coming to me to ask for advice or whatever, right? But the way that I treat how I interact with them is much different than the way that I interact with my clients. There's that level of professional distance, but I also recognize that as a therapist, right, I have training and knowledge that they might not necessarily have. And so I try to provide that perspective and that psychoeducation in the areas that I feel like I can, right? And obviously, I'm not going to try to treat their whatever, but I will use many therapeutic techniques to when I interact with them, right? If it's just like the basics of just reflective listening and active/reflective listening, right? And just like being there to kind of support them. I actually feel like as a friend, I can sometimes do more, right?
Sure.
Because there are ethical boundaries that I can't cross as a therapist, right? I can't buy you groceries. I can't come over to your house and like make your food, right? But as a friend, I can do those things. And sometimes those things are more therapeutic than a therapeutic intervention that you only see your therapist once a day, right? Versus sure. somebody who is actually in your life and helping you through whatever it is that you're going through, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think there's definitely important to have, it's important to have both. And the difference for me is that the friend level can go much further than the therapy level, but there's also that part of like professionalism that you have to maintain in the therapy relationship that you can kind of let down when it comes to being someone's friend. And it just, at the end of the day, it comes back down to the therapists, because some therapists really don't like it when their friends come to them and be like, hey, give me expert advice, right? But right. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, I was going to say, isn't the question when other people feel like they're coming to, they're the friend and they're being seen as like the therapist? That's the question I interpret. That's how I interpret it.
The question is like, how do you, what are your boundaries with like friends treating you like a therapist as opposed to a friend?
Oh, okay. So he did answer it correctly. So I misunderstood. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's hear from Leah first.
Yeah.
I think I want to say I'm very fortunate. My friends know what I do for work. And so they'll usually ask like, hey, I know you met with clients today. Do you have the space? Do you have the time? So I'm very fortunate for that. But when they do bring something up, I'll usually ask them, do you want me to be non-judgmental or do you want me to tell you what I feel, knowing what I know about you, knowing what I already know about you, how do you want me to respond?
Yeah.
And they'll be like, I just want you to listen. Or like, no, tell me how you really feel. And that's kind of like how I navigate it. Yeah. I don't do more than what I don't have, than what I have the bandwidth for.
Yeah.
I like that.
And they know that it's not personal. Mm-hmm. So that's how I navigate it.
Yeah.
I also don't mind, doing the questioning and stuff like that with my friends if I have the space for it, because they're my friends, and they would do the same for me even though they're not professional therapists, you know.
I think for me it's being honest with their intentions is what I'm on, because I don't mind helping my friends, right? Mm-hmm. I don't like it when someone goes, hey, can we hang out, and then it ends up being like 3 hours of like this, and I'm like, hey, you could have just asked the question and I would have done this instead of thinking, you know, free time, good times, guys. Like
there was a time in my life where I questioned why anybody wanted to hang out with me. That happened so many times. Like, hey, let me pick you up for your birthday. And then it's like, I'm out. And now I'm like listening to this thing for like an hour.
Just be honest. Just be honest so I can set my boundaries. That's
yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah. That's funny.
Random segue of they're in like tied to this. Do any of y'all have this struggle where strangers will just disclose things that you don't like overshare? I've had that happen to me, and I don't know where I'm giving that off, because I feel like I have like no hard resting bitch face.
And they don't know you're a therapist. They
don't know I'm a therapist. And like, they're like, hey, my name's blah, blah, blah. And within 5 minutes, they're like, oh, my uncle committed suicide and I feel this and I feel that. I'm like, I don't know you. I don't know who you are. Like, we're in a line at HEB buying groceries. You know?
So you don't have a resting bitch face. They see a very therapeutic face.
Yes.
Are you wearing your badge? It was your name tag.
They found me online, so they know who I am. Already. Yeah.
And they're stalking you.
I guess it's just me. But
they saw you on the news, man.
I've gotten that before, but I think they knew that I was a therapist.
Same. Mm-hmm.
Like in certain settings, they were like, "Oh, you're a therapist, right?" I'm like, "Yes, why?" You know, but not strangers completely not knowing who I am.
Yeah.
So I think that they're stalking you.
You're
like,
you're smiling too much or something.
Good.
That is hard though. I mean,
yeah. I mean, the worst is when you're on a plane. I do not know what I do on that.
Yeah. Right?
Now you're stuck 3 hours and they're like telling
you. No, I'm flat out rude. I'll put on AirPods or something.
Yeah.
I do.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to, you know, be on our podcast, Leah. Is there any last closing words you want to give out there, or contact information for any of your listeners out there?
I just want to say shout out to all of the people listening. I think that even if you're not in therapy, the fact that you're listening to a mental health podcast is a really good first step in your own recovery and your own destigmatization of mental health. So I think that's really great. And if anybody wants to follow along, I'm on Instagram, Alyssa Marie Wellness. And thank you guys for having me. I feel very honored.
So excited. Thanks for coming.
Welcome.
All right. So
have a good day, guys.
So we'll see you guys next week.
Yep.
Thank you for joining us.
Bye.